Welcome to the Hope on the Hard Road podcast, where you and your family can find community, find encouragement, and find hope for the road ahead. Speak encouraging words to one another. Build up hope so that you will all be together in this. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Before we get started today, we want to let you know that we are coming up on our annual Mom's Day Out retreat this May 17th through the 19th. Ladies, this year's retreat is going to be amazing. We're going to the Oaks here in San Diego, where we will enjoy luxury bunkhouse accommodations, yummy chef-created cuisine, an inspiring conference, and community connection with other moms who get it, along with lots of fun free time and rest, and activities including yoga under the stars, fireside chats, and much more. Register now on our website at hopeontheharroad.org or via the link on our social media. So hurry and grab your weekend retreat or Saturday tickets with a friend, and we'll see you there.
I'm so excited to have Garrett Wall back with us today on the podcast. Garrett joins us as we are in our dad series today. Garrett is the dad of a son with Down syndrome and autism, so he really understands the journey. He serves as the connection minister with Shine Disabilities Ministry at Southeast Christian Church in Louisville, Kentucky. He faithfully shepherds kids, teens, and adults with disabilities, as well as supporting their families. Garrett is a native of Dover, Tennessee, and lives with his wife, Becky, and their two children, Lily and Isaac. Really excited to hear from Garrett as he brings insight and encouragement to our dads. Let's get started. Well, Garrett, thanks for coming back today. You know, here we really want to focus on kind of your story and focusing on dads today. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah. So I live in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm on staff with Southeast Christian Church in the Shine Disabilities Ministry. I have been married to my wife, Becky, for 13 years now. And she is my best friend and the best thing that ever happened to me for sure. And we have two kiddos. We have a son, Isaac, who is 10, who has Down syndrome and autism, and a daughter, Lily, who is 12, who is a typical 12 going on 16. And so that's our little family. My wife's also in ministry, so we obviously love the Lord and are very focused on trying to serve him well and try to raise our kids in a way that points back to Jesus and let him do the work in that. But that's our little group.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks. So I know your son has, you know, disabilities and so forth like that. Can you talk about, you know, when he got diagnosed, how did that impact you, you know, maybe your wife too, your marriage, and kind of go through that whole process?
Yeah. So we found out that he likely had Down syndrome in the delivery room. There had been some red flags and some concerns through the pregnancy. He was smaller than he should have been as he was growing, and his head was smaller at one point than it should have been. There were some issues with amniotic fluid. And so there were some red flags along the way. And through that, Becky's doctor had given us, you know, this long list of possible causes for what was leading to this. And I think we did a test for one thing to rule it out. I don't remember what it was. But for us, it was never a concern. It was okay if he has a diagnosis of some sort. Like, obviously abortion was not an option. And so we knew, hey, this is what the Lord's got planned, whatever. And then as we got closer to the delivery date, things sort of leveled off, and he sort of landed in a more expected range physically. The amniotic fluid had gotten back to where it was supposed to be. And so we were feeling, as we got closer to the delivery date, that there wouldn't be any type of health concern. But her doctor recommended having a specialist on call to examine him when he was born. And so we did that. And so it was our second child. Lily, we had to induce because she was in there. She may have never come out. She was so happy inside mom. So because of history with her and because there had been some bumps early in the pregnancy, we decided to induce once he got to 39 weeks, I think, is when we induced. And so went in, had him. Everything went really smooth with the delivery. And then I remember very vividly him being delivered, us noticing a couple of things physically on him, his some issues with his hands, and but not really thinking much about it, that were not related to Down syndrome. But then the them taking him over to the specialist to be examined, and he was on the other side of the room. And I remember watching, just, you know, I was with Becky and making sure she's okay. And we're just hanging out. He's examining him, Isaac. And then they called me over. And I remember going over to him and him, you know, in a very caring but very clear, you know, medical kind of way, just walking through what he had found. And he basically outlined all of the physical characteristics that he found that were consistent with someone with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. I remember him telling me that, and him not saying that, hey, he absolutely has it, but there's a very high likelihood that we'll do a blood test and we'll know for sure. And hearing that, and then knowing that Becky was across the room watching me, mm-hmm. and I remember thinking to myself that I got to keep myself together here because she's watching and I can't crumble from across the room because she's going to know something bad's happening. You know, and because that was my mindset. I, in that moment, I didn't grow up with a lot of friends or a lot of people in my community that had Down syndrome or that had special needs. And so I didn't have that understanding of what this was going to mean. I just was viewing it from the lens of, this is not what I want. You know, mm-hmm. This is not what I want for me. It's not what I want for Isaac. And then I walked over to Becky and started telling her, you know, what the doctor had shared with me. And I just remember us being very emotional. You know, it was hard. One of the things that I appreciate the most, it's funny how in those kind of moments you remember certain things. Mm-hmm. I remember Becky's doctor. They had taken Isaac out, and it was still the doctor and a couple of nurses. And I remember her clearing the room, knowing what the doctor had told us about Isaac. She cleared the room. And she told us to take as much time as we needed in that room by ourselves. And to this day, it just, you know, it'll make me tear up because I'm thinking, man, she appreciated the gravity of that moment of us learning something that she knew we didn't want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so we just talked and we cried, and somewhere in that the Lord guided us to pray. And I remember us praying, and somehow the words came out of my mouth and our mouths of, Lord, we're going to praise you, even in the mm-hmm. midst of a storm that we don't even know what it means. And it's certainly not what we want, but we're going to praise you because you're still good.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, Eric, the first time in my life that I encountered something that was heavy and difficult and daunting and responding in praise. I you know, it's one of those things where, you know, that's the right
thing.
You see it biblically. But we did that. And so, I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for that the mm-hmm. Lord was gracious enough to prompt that in us. And that's how we found out. And obviously we found out a couple days later that it was a positive test and that he was, you know, diagnosed with Down syndrome, and have been mm-hmm. navigating that ever since. And I wouldn't change him if I could. I wouldn't mm-hmm. say that. I know in the next stage of life in heaven, God mm-hmm. will have him perfectly the way he wants. But in this side of it, I've always told people, if he is good enough for the Lord the way he designed him, then he is absolutely good enough for me. And so I wouldn't change him. It is a part of his personality. And, but it was a hard season of life for sure.
Oh yeah. Totally understandable. You know, I know a real common thing, and we talk and actually teach a lot of the parents about, is a grief cycle.
Yeah.
You know, and it actually sounds like God blessed you incredibly that grief cycle was was really almost temporary in a lot of ways, and you started transitioning. But I know for, you know, and one of the things with that also is that it continually becomes revisited, because as you start hitting milestones with the children, and they don't do some of the same things that their typical peers do, that you start grieving that again and so forth like that. But to get to the point where you see, you're like, okay, this isn't what I expected. This isn't what I've chose. This is what God wants for my life. And to embrace that and say, okay, we're gonna look, not saying that there's not disappointment and things like that, but moving forward from that grief cycle is a huge, huge step, and seeing God's purpose in it.
Yeah. And I love that you brought up the grief cycle, because I think as dads, that's something that we don't want to talk about, because there's an emotional part of that we just don't want to deal with. But secondly, I think it's important for us to understand that that's real. Like I remember sitting in his room. His bedroom is baseball themed. I worked in college baseball for 10 years before ministry and loved baseball. His room was baseball themed, and found some letters that sort of look like old school scoreboard letters that we put his name on the wall before he was born. And I remember once we got home with him, and I mean, it was within one of the first few days, I was in his room. I think I was sitting on the floor. And I remember looking at his name on the wall and thinking, man, when we put those letters up just a few weeks ago, my dreams for him were a lot different than they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as a dad wrestling with that reality of like, okay, I'm probably not going to be able to do sports and do activities and do certain things the same way with him that I would have if he didn't have that Down syndrome. It certainly doesn't mean he can't do things. But just that reality. And so that grief cycle is absolutely real. I mean, he's 10 years old, and whether it's in school or different activities or different milestones, even now, I mean, it takes you back to those moments where you're so raw and it's heavy. And I think for dads, the more we can acknowledge that and encourage one another in that, the healthier we become so that we don't suppress those things and then they eat at us.
Yeah, no, that's definitely real in terms of all that, you know, and on the same line, you talk about a grief cycle with your own child and coming to grips with that. You had an entire career change, and, you know, we share something, the athletics thing. I was in coaching, and, you know, you were in the entire University of Louisville and sports information and all that. So can you talk about that? You know, you obviously have the ambition to do that. It's a very fun environment, job, and so forth like that. But then transitioning from there and here, feeling the Lord put on your heart that you're to move into a different field that may not be so glamorous, and serving a population with special needs, in full-time ministry. Talk about that and kind of the feeling of sacrificing and following the Lord's lead in that.
Yeah, it was scary in some ways. And still, when I really think about it, I guess it's a little daunting, because since I was very young, I loved sports. And once I understood in college that I could actually work in sports behind the scenes, doing the things that you do in media relations and PR, that's what I wanted to do. Like, that's what I felt called to. It's what I felt like my ministry or my career path was. And so that's what I chased, and that's what I did when I was at Murray State as a student. And I worked my way through school and then moving to Louisville, and I loved it. And that's really all I ever thought I would do. Mm-hmm. And so, as we got married, it was easy still, because Becky could come along and be a part of a lot of the things I was doing. When we had Lily, it got a little harder. And then obviously when we had Isaac, it became much more difficult because of the level of need that he had. And so what we began to find is I traveled on the road with baseball or soccer or some football games or whatever I was doing. We were seeing it was more difficult for the kids and for Becky when I was gone. And so we sort of got into this reality of, okay, this is not sustainable. You know, I'm pretty ineffective as a husband and as a dad when I'm absent. And so, it was one of those things of like, man, I don't know what to do with that, Lord, you know? And so I started pursuing communications jobs outside of athletics, because that's what I felt equipped for. That's where my training was. And, you know, I had a background in that. And It was discouraging because I kept pursuing things and getting nowhere. And it became really clear after several months, probably a year or so, that the Lord was just closing doors. And so I reached a point where I was like, okay, God, if I'm not supposed to pursue these things, but I think it's clear you don't want me staying in athletics forever, what do you want me to do with that? And then that's when I interviewed for the communications job here at the church and didn't get it, but had the conversation with Trey, a buddy of mine who was the communications director at the time. And he encouraged me to pursue ministry. Becky had said, hey, you'd be great in ministry. And I laughed at her. And then he says that. And I'm like, okay, Lord, I if this is what you want, I don't know what to do with that because I'm never been to Bible college, never been to seminary. I can write a press release and I can score a baseball game, but I don't know what I'm supposed to do in ministry. But to see him sort of reveal the plan slowly, I think was important. I will say this. I think I needed to fail for a year or more of pursuing the things that I thought I needed before I was ready for him to show me that he had a different plan. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. I think it's a hard, long journey to let go of what you thought your dreams were, what you believe God created you to do and what you do well at because you're gifted to that, and to say, wait, God, you're not going to use that and go in a whole different direction or really, I mean, use your talents in a different direction, but different, whole different direction in terms of what we had in mind, you know, when, as a career.
Yeah. I think I needed to be humbled a little bit as a guy to say, okay, just because I had this and was doing this and I'm good at this and all these things, if God had, you know, if I had had that interaction with Trey in those first few months of me pursuing jobs, I think I would have fought it and I would have pushed back. And I don't think I was ready to embrace that. Okay, Lord, if this is what you want, then I'm ready for it. And I'm so thankful for it. It's been wonderful, but it definitely took some time for me to be ready for what the Lord had planned. And it took some humbling moments for me to be teachable enough to embrace that his plan was different, but better than mine.
Well, and I think that's God's way. I mean, he humbles all of us to see where we are, where he wants us as a father, where he wants us, you know, career-wise, ministry, and to be open to him. And, you know, humility allows us then to be open. Okay, God, what do you really want? And it kind of leads into this next question then, you know, in terms of looking at a career, looking at a father, and all the other demands on your life, what advice would you have for balancing all those things?
It's a very difficult but important balance. I think as men, we are wired to provide and to be the breadwinners and all of these things in so many ways. And I think sometimes even I'm guilty of this, that we think, well, if we're working and we're providing and we're making a way for these physical and tangible needs, that's the box we need to check off, and that from there on we can sort of disconnect and unplug and just be, you know, on the couch doing whatever. And you know, I've had several people remind me, and just hearing different people share that, like, that journey from me getting off of work, even though my work is ministry, to that drive home, it needs to be used as a time for me to get mentally prepared and charged to be fully present when I get home, to be husband and dad. And I'm intentional to say husband before dad. I will say that. I think
that's great.
We're going to talk about marriage maybe a little bit at some point, but you know, if I was husband before I was dad. In our case, you know, we can get into, but that, like, that's God's plan and the order of it. And I think it's important. We have to fight for our marriages. We have to fight for our families as the husbands, because the enemy is going to try to tear our families apart. And if he can tear it apart by distracting us and creating apathy in us as the husbands and the dads, then that's what he will do. And so I think the balance is being able to have good boundaries. I think, you know, whether it's boundaries from technology or the distractions that draw you away from your wife and your kids, then you have to have boundaries for those things. Boundaries with work. Just because you're providing for the family doesn't give you the It doesn't make it okay for you to work 50, 60, 70 hours a week and assume that your family will be okay. Like that is not a good balance, and that's not a good rhythm. And so those boundaries, so that you can be present and be invested. And man, I am still not great at it. I will tell you, I'm not good at it at all. But I'm hopefully getting a little better one day or week or month at a time, in helping be fully present, fully invested in loving my wife well, loving my kids well, carrying the load at home. Because if your wife is anything like my wife, if like so many moms out there, they not only carry the load at home, but they wear it too in such a way that is very taxing emotionally for our moms and our wives. And so we as husbands need to love them well, to be present, and just have those boundaries so that they know we're fully invested in what's happening with our family.
Yeah, I really love that. The idea of teamwork with your wife and teamwork with your family and setting up boundaries. What does it make so that it's healthy and that they know they're important? You know, when we come home, our wives know they're important. Our kids know that they're important, and working with all that. And this kind of leads into it too, you know, is that, talking about other guys, partnering with other guys and not becoming isolated in this journey, especially with special needs, and partnering with other dads in terms of, you know, that are like-minded and will encourage each other. Can you talk about the importance of that?
Yeah, I think that's super important because that's where we get encouragement. I think being able to rub shoulders with other men who are on a similar journey and a similar path of life, that we can trust, that we can be vulnerable and honest with, and get encouragement out of that. Because this is, you know, the enemy wants to convince us that we're alone, that we're isolated, that we're the only ones that are struggling with this, or having a hard time with this, or whatever it may be. I mean, that's, you know, really the biggest tool the enemy has is lies and misdirection. And so if he can convince us to believe something that's not true, and he does it usually when we're alone, then he's winning that battle. And so the way we combat that is to iron sharpens iron, to be with other men. And it doesn't have to always be men who have kids with special needs, but I think there's a benefit to being around other men who are in a similar place in life or have been there, maybe someone who's a little older, or someone who has a great deal of empathy for what you're going through, so that you can just be encouraged, you can be vulnerable, you can be honest. I know vulnerability is a terrible word for so many men, but like it's part of this struggle is we're not honest and vulnerable enough, I think, at times, whether it's our emotions, whether it's our sin, whatever it may be. Because again, the enemy is going to convince us that, well, if you struggle with this sin issue, you're disqualified from being good at anything and you just need to suppress that and hide it. No, that is a lie. And so we get hope from one another when we can confide and encourage and just be dudes together. And so I love, you know, just hearing you talk about some of your guys' events and the things that you do together to build up that relationship with guys. It's not going to happen overnight. You have to earn trust and it comes with time. But the more time you spend with a group of guys and can build relationships and build trust, then you have that foundation where you can be more vulnerable, be more honest with what's happening in your life, and hopefully all point back to Jesus and as the hope as we journey through that.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then coming with those same guys that are also going to encourage you in marriage, because, you know, one of the things I think we've talked about is that, you know, first off, going into marriage, you realize you're pretty selfish, and it's a good mirror in saying, man, okay, I need to learn to be more selfless. But then you throw in a kid, and that's a much better because they can't feed themselves as a young kid. But then if you throw in the mix of a special needs child, then that child may never be able to do some of the things on their own, and you're always going to be serving. So it's really an opportunity to become learning more and more how God's treating it, taking us on a journey of becoming more and more selfless, which would be like Jesus. And so pairing yourself and working with men that are on that same kind of journey that they see God working that way and encouraging them. But our marriages are important, you know, our marriage relationships, and there's a lot of tension, a lot of stress on them with all the different needs and the trials and things that are not always welcomed that come our way. So what advice would you have for marriage, for building and continuing to have a strong marriage with their wives?
Yeah, there's nothing about parenting a kiddo with special needs is going to naturally point back to building your marriage. It's all of those details, all of those moving parts, all of those plates spinning and caring for a family and caring specifically for a kiddo with special needs. Those are things that are going to be more likely to tear your marriage apart than build it up. And so the way that you do that is through intentionality. And I said it earlier, the language that I would go to, especially as a man, is, man, you need to fight for your marriage. You need to fight for your wife. You need to fight for your marriage. You obviously fight for your kids. But by fighting, I mean finding those intentional pathways to love her well, to spend time with her, to support her, to help manage things around the house that maybe she typically does, blah, 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 that you help take on. Sending her away for a girl's day or night. Sending her for a massage. I know it's really hard. We talked about this earlier off the recording, but how hard it is to get date nights when you can't find sitters, when you don't trust people with your kid. But I think you have to seek out ways to find those moments so that the two of you can get away and have a moment that feels like it did when you were dating or newly married, because that's the passion and the heart and the level of affection that your wife needs. Obviously spending time together physically and you know, those elements obviously important because we as guys are just wired that way. But man, your wife needs to feel loved and know that she's loved. And as you said earlier, to know that she's not just a priority, but the priority. And I know she will feel loved by the way you sacrifice and give with your time working and providing for your family and doing those things. But man, she needs to know that you love her. And, you know, whether it's the love languages or whatever, figuring out what things speak to her. Is it time? Is it gifts? Is it, you know, whatever that might be. But to fight for your marriage, because the enemy absolutely wants to break your marriage apart. There's no doubt about it. And so if you can use a kid with special needs to do it, he will.
So, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the thought of the love languages. If you can figure out how your, and you should figure out how your wife is wired and what really speaks to her, you know, exactly. It's not the same for everyone, but if you know what speaks to your wife so that they know they're loved, it goes a long way for the marriage and really helps encourage and through those difficult things. You know, looking back on your journey with special needs, you know, obviously you've been doing this for a number of years and you found out quite early, you know, what is something that maybe you'd want to leave and encourage with dads, or even sometimes what might they want to avoid?
It's a good question. You know, if you have other kids, you know, if you have multiple kids, the more you can invest in loving those typical kiddos and making them a priority, the better. We have obviously Lily, our older daughter, and she has, as she's gotten older, shared some experiences she felt when she was younger, when Isaac was young, that we had no idea about. And it was hard to hear because of the level of attention and this, and our heart was good, but it's become increasingly clear that we need to invest more in finding her love language as a 12-year-old and investing in that and loving all of our kids well, because the kid with special needs is going to require more time and energy and require and dictate your schedule more. And that's going to impact your whole family. And so I, you know, as a dad trying to love my daughter well and sort of to model what it looks like to be a godly man, a godly husband, a godly dad, and to provide that love and care and affection and tension in her now so that she doesn't go other places looking for it and looking for ways that are ungodly and unbiblical. Man, as a dad for a daughter, I can't emphasize that enough. And I think just not allowing the external things for your family, whether it's job, whether it's hobby, whatever it is that is for you, just not allowing that to control you and dictate mm-hmm. too much, and pull you away from your family. I love sports and I love these things, but I can see even now where there have been times in my early in Isaac's life and early in our marriage even where, man, I was pretty selfish in some ways that may have created some walls that they can be broken down by the power of the Holy Spirit for sure. But mm-hmm. it's harder when you choose to be selfish instead of choose to be selfless as the leader of your home.
Mm-hmm. It's just such a good advice, you know, leading by example, leading to be selfless, but also involving your other kids. And also, I mean, the thought about having a daughter and the role of a father in a daughter's life is so pivotal. That's great. You know, and one of the challenges with siblings is sometimes it means, you know, you have to split and divide and do those things. You know, it doesn't always happen where both of you can spend that undivided time. So sometimes dad takes the other child out or mom takes the other child out and programming that into your schedule so that you have those experiences. You know, my kids are now 19 and 21. My son is 21, but I can look back and we have memories of things that, you know, mom was really the one that, you know, intentionally pushed us out to go to the ball games and do different things and have those experiences to hold on to. You know, that we did that. And then, of course, she did stuff, too, with him. And, you know, she even, for us, we traveled. And I took a trip to Europe with him. And she took a trip to D.C. and New York with him. But you have to be intentional with those things. They don't just happen. And there's a lot of obstacles in place that keep you from doing those. So all the more. So fantastic advice, definitely. Yeah. So. One of the things we always like to do as we interview somebody is, you know, what is one thing that you'd really want to send as a message to dads that would give them hope for the journey ahead?
Well, I'm a minister, so I think just the spiritual piece to this, I think as a dad, you may wrestle with the why behind why your kid was created this way or why God gave this to you or why, you know, all of these questions. I think for me, ultimately the hope is in Jesus and answering those questions. And so I would just encourage all of those things we've been talking about, why you don't want to be isolated, why you don't want to be only focused on material things or work things or things that are sort of superficial, even though they may be good in some level. At the end of the day, none of that stuff's really going to carry on. And so what do you hold on to for the hope? You know what I mean? And so I think for dads, it's like examining that and asking those questions. Obviously, if you follow Jesus, then you know the answer to that. It's Christ. If you don't, mm-hmm. then I would challenge you to explore who is this Jesus dude and why, what does he have to do with me and my family and my kid with special needs? But as you lean into that, be willing to go deeper with the Lord. Like, you know, the more time you can spend in the Word, the more time you can spend in prayer, the more loving and effective and godly you're going to be as a husband and as a dad. And it makes those things we've talked about happen mm-hmm. easier because we're not doing it at our own strength. I mean, if you take a step back and look at your entire life and all these moving parts and moving elements as a dad of a kiddo with special needs, Eric, it's daunting. It is mm-hmm. a lot. And so I think there's a reality of, okay, I can't do this on my own. So how am I going to do this? Well, I'm just going to have to do it with the strength of the Holy Spirit and the importance of spending time with him and then surrounding yourself with guys who also love Jesus. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be singing hymns and reading Psalms. Mm-hmm. It can be with a group of dudes who love Jesus that you go to the ball game or axe throwing or hunting or go whatever. Mm-hmm. It like fill in the blank, but surrounding yourself with guys who love Jesus and who will point you back to that importance of your faith and the journey in this, because as scripture says, like all of this is about him. Like God didn't, mm-hmm. it was not a surprise to God that your kid had special needs. Like he wasn't caught off guard. He created it. He did it on purpose. In Exodus, mm-hmm. he told Moses, it is I who make the the deaf, mute, and the blind, unable to see. Like, it's me. I do it on purpose, and I do it for a purpose, and it's for my glory and for your good. And so just the hope has to be in what Jesus wants to do in that through you as a godly husband and as a godly dad.
That's fantastic advice, you know, just, and that is where the hope is, yeah. You know, so appreciate you coming on here, giving you your perspective, your insight, you know, advice and so forth like that to dads. I really think this is just an incredible podcast and going to be totally valuable for the dads that, you know, hear this. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the invitation. It's been fun to chat with you and get to know you a little bit. And, I'm just thankful for, people like you and your wife who have a heart, you're living it, but you have a heart for encouraging others who are on a similar journey, and you know the hope is in Jesus. And so I'm so thankful for what you guys are doing, for the way that you're encouraging families, moms, dads, siblings, everyone, but also encouraging churches to take steps of faith to love on families like yours and like mine, because we need the love for sure.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Resources and contact information for today's podcast will be included in the show notes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share us with others and be sure to follow us so you won't miss an episode. And we'd love to hear from you, so please leave us a comment or rating and connect with us on social media or on our website at hopeonthehardroad.org.